The Compliance Perspectives podcast is sponsored by Onspring, a no-code GRC software for compliance pros like you. Visit onspring.com to learn more. Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from New Delhi is Tanya Ganguly. Tanya is Principal Associate at the Law Offices of Panag and Babu. And today we're having a rather fortuitously timed conversation. May 20th to 23rd of this year, 2024, we'll be having our first ever academy in India. It'll take place in Bangalore. And as it happens, India has new criminal laws that will be relevant for corporations and compliance programs. So it's great that Tanya can explain these to us. So Tanya, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. You know, we hear that India has come up with some new criminal laws. What's new? What's changed versus the recent past?
Hi, Adam. Firstly, thank you so much for having me here today. And thank you for that very generous introduction. Glad to be here. Absolutely. On your question, indeed, there have been significant developments in the India's legal landscape. To provide a bit of context, traditionally, India's criminal law framework revolved around three main statutes. The first one being the Indian Penal Code or the IPC, the Indian Evidence Act or the IEA, and the Criminal Procedure Code or the CRPC. Now, these laws have been the backbone of our legal system for quite some time now, with the IPC covering the various penal offences, the CRPC governing procedural aspects, and the IEA dealing with the evidentiary matters for civil as well as criminal matters. Now, over time, there have been amendments and updates to these laws, both at the central level as well as the individual states. But as we progressed into the 21st century, it became clear that these laws needed a comprehensive overhaul just to keep pace with the increasingly evolving societal norms, advancements in technology, and international standards. Just to give you all some context, these laws have been as old as, you know, being part of 1800s, and hence the Indian Parliament, in their wisdom, had decided to streamline and revise our criminal laws. Now, this overhaul essentially meant revisiting and restructuring the existing statutes to make them more relevant, efficient, and of course, in line with contemporary legal practices. So while the basic principles are still intact, there have been revisions and additions that have been made to address loopholes, enhance efficiency, and just to ensure better access to justice for all. I genuinely feel that this is a great step in aligning our legal framework to the complexities of modern world. And it's important to wait and watch and see how these pan out in the near future.
Yeah, it's always the case of the gap between what the law says and then how things pan out. Now, how have these three pieces of legislation been implemented already? What's their current status?
So typically in India, when a statute is passed by the parliament, so both the houses will pass it, and the president will give their assent, after which it becomes notified in the official gazette. Now, similarly, for these three new acts, they have already been notified in the gazette, which is in itself a very big step towards their formal enactment. But it's important to note that while the notification has been issued, the detailed implementation plan has not officially been announced. There is some chatter that the implementation might commence initially with the union territories before extending to the rest of the states. But at this juncture, it's crucial to understand that implementing such a comprehensive legal reform, of course, won't happen overnight. It's going to take careful planning, coordination, and creating of supporting infrastructure to ensure there's smooth execution of, you know, implementation in the implementation process. Also, again, a very important point is, similar to all other laws, these will not have retrospective applicability. So in other words, these will have prospective applicability. These will only apply to offenses which have been committed after the effective implementation date. And so for the foreseeable future for companies, And the relevant compliance officers, I think it's going to be important to keep in mind that there are both the new laws and the old laws, and legal practitioners as well will need to be mindful of the legal framework applicable to their specific situations going forward, at least for the next year or so.
Now, what are the key takeaways for companies going forward?
That's an excellent question, Adam. Without delving into every detail of the extensive changes that are brought in by these three laws, which of course they include a substantial overhaul of offenses concerning women and children, shift in the overall objective of law, being more victim-centric, and the integration of a lot of technology-related jargon into the statute books, I'll focus strictly on what we predominantly observe in our practice and what might be relevant to compliance officers and companies. But through these three new laws. Just a quick heads up, I just wanted to clarify that compliance officers don't need to turn the house upside down just because these three new laws are being, implemented going forward. So there are some changes, but in case companies are doing, business ethically and they are ensuring best practices in their day-to-day procedures, there's not much change that's going to happen or that's going to impact them. So the key changes that we've noted in these acts are firstly quantum of punishment. So there's been notable changes in the punishment for offenses such as criminal breach of trust, cheating, destruction of evidence. These are mostly the offenses that we also look at in any of the white collar offenses. So it's important that companies must, of course, update their compliance training programs as well as their internal policies and procedures to reflect these changes. And of course, also assess any potential financial or reputational risks which are associated with non-compliance, especially for these specific offenses. There's also an addition of a new section on abetment outside India for offenses committed in India. Now, this brings a fresh perspective to jurisdictional issues, and I think it's a great avenue wherein compliance officers may use this to compel or rather encourage the tone from the top for conducting business ethically in India. So, just to give you some quick context, if there's an employee who's based not out of India but he is handling operations in India, I think this will be a good segue to essentially encourage that the tone from the top needs to be right and business needs to be done in the most ethical manner, so that it gets percolated across his or her team as well, which is working in India. Now, there are also certain changes in provisions on search, seizure, attachment of property. So I think companies now can probably integrate these newer aspects into their dawn raid training sessions for employees. I think it'll be a good it'll be a good aspect to add these and a good point to add these within their dawn raid training and probably have these as part of it as well. Now, there's also use of technology or use of technology in investigation process and for delivery of summons. And there has been, these three new acts talk a lot about technological advancements and where the country is as on date. I think we are pretty technologically advanced, and I think it's a good way to add these and ensure that what was being practiced probably as a precedent in the past few years is now getting codified in the law as well. A lot of these aspects are already being done as part of investigations. For instance, the admissibility of a matching hash value of the original record as a proof of evidence are common practices in investigations worldwide. So just to make everyone understand what this means, in case for a particular investigation, there is data being transferred from, let's say, a US-based parent company to India. Now, there will be a hash value that needs to be matched, which essentially says that the data that's been sent from the US-based parent company is the same as what has been received and downloaded over here. Now, that's something that was already being done. In case there are companies, of course, there are companies that might not have, given this that much of an attention back then, I think it's a good time to probably add these aspects into their, investigations, internal investigations going forward. Now, another idea would also be, so there's an also a reference of using technology for delivery of summons. Again, something that was being practiced in the past few years as well. The courts have held that, delivering summons through WhatsApp, etc., is admissible. But I think one more thing that the company could do is probably have an auto forwarding or an auto reply email for employees who leave the organization. And also an alert may be forwarded to the compliance officer for redressal in such cases, because we're going to see more of these kind of, summons being delivered online through email, through text, etc. So it'll also be a good practice to undertake going forward. Another thing is regarding digitization of records. Similar to my past point, since there's so much of reliance and so much of attention to technology being given now, I think companies must digitize their records, their documentation, and ensure that they are well compartmentalized, digitally recorded, and indexed for easy reference. What happens in most of these law enforcement matters is that a lot of times the documents are all over the place. They might be spread across five factories in five different states, and there's no centralized repository. So it's a good idea to probably start managing that, because that's going to help going forward with the way the law has been envisioned. I think it's going to be a good practice to go ahead with. Last point would be regarding, the fact that this law is going to be implemented in a staggered manner. As I mentioned in my previous question as well, that rumor has it that, it's first going to be implemented in the union territories, and then it's going to be coming to the other states. So probably it's a good idea to, for companies to work with their legal counsel to continuously track and implement the implementation status, and probably maintain a live document which says what's applicable where, and ensure that they are prepared accordingly. There are so many companies which have a pan-India presence, so this will be a good step going forward. So I think these are some of the key aspects that I think are probably the key takeaways that companies and compliance officers may be prepared for or must be prepared for going forward. As I mentioned earlier, it's essentially a precedent-based law that was being followed and is now being codified. Of course, monitoring and focus on corporate governance is key. And I think the transition period will be, let's say, the next 3 to 7 years, wherein, there's some level of ambiguity, going forward. But I think it's a good time for companies to go over their company policies and see if they're all updated as per the new law, and, maintain the overall intention of prioritizing a culture of integrity. And I think these aspects should actually help companies navigate this period in a very, very efficient and effective manner. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for these insights. There's a lot, obviously, there. I mean, it's good news that they'll be implemented over a 3 to 7 year period. So it's not like it's all at once, but it'll certainly be a lot more for organizations to think about in terms of their compliance effort. Well, Tanya, thank you for sharing all of this with us today. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCC and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.